with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you remember and reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, helping you remember and reclaim who you are and have always been. I am so happy to be here with you this evening and every other Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and any other time in between. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, please visit my website. It had been under construction for a while, but it is launched and it is ready to go. I think there's one more section that's under construction, but everything else is good. It's www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. That's www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. And on that particular website, you can also check out my social media pages on YouTube, LinkedIn, and Facebook, as well as if you want to message me on WhatsApp. Just click on the logos and for each and every one of those links. Now, just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, these broadcasts are also podcasted, in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. I'll give you that website information. It's on www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. Okay, www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And you might have to click on Station 1 in order to find me. Now, for those of you who might be tuning in for the very first time, I just want to share with you and everybody out there, as I do every week, two deep-seated beliefs that have helped shape my outlook on reclaiming our authentic selves as souls. In fact, it is this same philosophy. Excuse me there. Swallowed my iced tea down the wrong pipe. In fact, this same philosophy is what I share with clients regarding how and why I work with them the way that I do. My own philosophy, okay? It's just a style or whatever you want to call it. But these I've been carrying around in my heart for decades and decades and decades, pretty much all my life. And the first one is that I truly believe that people have the answers within themselves, because they know the kind of life they want to live. They know how they feel and what brings them peace and joy and hope, and they know what doesn't. And sometimes you and I both know we could be in the wrong place at the wrong time and something traumatic can happen to us. Or maybe we thought that we've dealt with an experience or reaction in our past, only to discover later that unresolved issues keep popping up again and again and again, or we keep making the same mistakes over and over again. And now we have to go back and go deeper into our healing. And that's okay, because many times our struggles are there to teach us something about ourselves in terms of our responses, and especially the shadow side, which is what this show is going to be focusing on tonight. Well, last week, I read an interesting prayer of gratitude, which just prompted me to, like, I'm going to talk about the shadow side here, because I like this quote. Okay, kind of blanking on where I got this quote from, but it's a general lesson that I think is appropriate for everybody. And it goes like this. I want to thank everybody who has triggered me so I can further heal my shadow self. I'll say that again. I want to thank everyone who has triggered me so I can further heal my shadow self. And that really puts the shadow side of us more in the role of a teacher, you know, kind of holding up a mirror to us and saying, if you have a reaction, or a response to what triggers you or somebody who triggers you, well, then we have some more work to do on ourselves. I'm going to take this thought a little bit deeper tonight. I'm going to say not only is the shadow side that mirror that holds it up to us and just says, look, we have more work to do, but also the more we see our shadow side as that teacher and one who can give us insights into where we can heal, I'm convinced it also allows our soul to emerge, who we truly are, in more effective ways. In fact, teaching us how to live as a soul in this world. Well, all of that is the first deep-seated belief that I have. The second deep-seated philosophy I have is that I believe everybody comes into this world with what they already need in this life, in terms of their giftedness, their talents, their skills, graces, personalities, so on and so forth. In other words, the very best parts of who they are, as well as the potential for knowing themselves as a soul. And again, this is where the shadow side comes in. You see, we, you know, even though we may have been through some pretty awful and traumatic experiences, we may tend to stop believing that we came into this world full of value and dignity and worth, as well as, well, as a result, we might want to hide our giftedness so that others will not exploit these. And either way, we end up going through life thinking from or speaking from and living from a place of woundedness instead of from a place of healing and grace, and love, and peace, and wholeness. I mean, after all, we are already these things. We just don't fully realize who we truly are, let alone realizing that we have the potential to also be the healing, the grace, the love, the peace, and the wholeness in any situation that we find ourselves in. And this was something that I was reminded of. This is a very Franciscan teaching out there that it says, look, in any situation you find yourselves, if you cannot find the peace, you become the peace. And that has some tremendous results. I have seen this personally, and I've been on the other end of a person just being the peace in just a very hectic, chaotic situation. So, and after all, you know, we are all these things, just like I said, but we just don't fully realize who we truly are yet. And the reason for this is that all of our experiences are taken in through our five senses, the senses of sight, sound, taste, touch, and smell. But these are very limited because our minds want to come in and start interpreting things based on past results or past experiences or what we think is true. And as a result, we start to convince ourselves that, well, the only truth out there is if I can see it, well, then it must be true. And if I can hear it, well, then that must be true. And if I can touch it, if I can hold it in my hands, then that must be true. As well as the other sensory related experiences that we believe to be the end all be all truth. But like I said, these sensory perceptions are limited because whatever is taken in through the brain, the mind comes in and interprets what it has seen and heard and tasted and touched and smelled based on our limited experiences and starts slapping labels on it and judgments and all this other stuff. And it just totally forgets that the holiest and the most transformative experiences are actually the ones that touch the soul, not the mind. So please, don't go off searching for something you already are. That is the great irony of life. We often go off and search. We love movies like The Wizard of Oz. We're off to see the wizard. Why? Well, he's going to give us something that we think we lack. Well, aren't you in for a surprise? The wizard reminding you that you already have a brain. You already have a heart. You already have courage. Dorothy could go home anytime she wanted to and so forth. Okay. And, you know, this aspect is very important when considering who we are. Because although we may have similar gifts and skills and talents and strengths and character traits, no two people express these identically. So, in other words, each of us have a thisness about us that cannot be duplicated. Okay, this is, something that I often have a lot of fun trying to explain this to kids. Like, yeah, look, you are special. You have a thisness about you. Because, yeah, people can try and imitate how we do things, but nobody has the ability to duplicate us. Because, within us lies what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as hacheitas, a thisness, a uniqueness, if you will. So how I explain this to kids is like, look at your thumbprint. Everybody has a thumbprint, okay? We all come into the world with our own gifts and graces and skills and so forth, but no two thumbprints are alike. And therefore, what you have is unique to you because of how you live it out, because of how you express that in your relationship with one another and so forth. Yeah, but unfortunately, millions of people never have a chance to discover their uniqueness. Because society is still out there often telling people to look for those things in all the wrong places. We're told to look for that thisness in the externals of life, or the accumulation of things, or the accomplishments, or the accolades. But this is not where our thisness, our uniqueness, and hacheitas is to be found. Instead, full expression of who we are is to be found within the deep realization and full experiences within ourselves as the soul. Well, in their book, Becoming Medicine, the authors Joseph Rael, a beautiful painted arrow, and David Topex state that everybody already has their medicine. And the way you become a medicine person is that you practice who you are, because you are already medicine. No one gives it to you. You are already it. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about, folks. It really can be summed up in one word, namaste, which my rough translation is, because I see myself as a soul of light. As I recognize this, this allows me to greet the lighted soul of who you are, even if you do not realize that is who you are. Even if you have yet to discover this, I see it because I see myself as a soul of light. Makes all the difference in the world in interpreting namaste. You know, something where you really wrap our heads and our hearts and our souls around that one. We're never going to take saying namaste lightly ever again. And, all of these broadcasts, I place, this tremendous focus of reclaiming authenticity on the integration of our spirituality and our mental health, and all within the context, the greater context of our relationships, the relationship that we have with ourselves, and not just the person looking back in the mirror first thing in the morning, but we have a relationship with others, and we have the relationship certainly with God or the divine. And this is why the integration is essential within the context of our relationships. So think about it this way. We often receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, and yes, even spiritual wounds in relationships. And the irony is that we can also discover our greatest healing and strength and peace and forgiveness and love through healthier relationships. Again, remember the prayer of gratitude I said earlier. I want to thank everyone or everything that has triggered me so I can further heal my shadow self. Because after all, when we start looking at relationships or talking about relationships, it's going to bring us back full circle, because we just might realize that these relationships that have so wounded us just might be within our own families. They just might be among coworkers. They just might be among friends. However, when we transform, when we're able to heal our shadow self, and the more and more awareness of who we are as souls continues to emerge, when we're able to transform, we also transform others by our presence, our grace, our understanding. But first, you know, forgiveness, kindness, and compassion begin with how we treat ourselves. Because when we are compassionate with ourselves, we then can be compassionate with others. And when we are forgiving with ourselves, certainly we then can be more forgiving with others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then will discover how this opens up our hearts to see and to live in gratitude with others. So all in all, first and foremost, transformation begins with us. Because whether the wounding was intentional or accidental, it's what we do afterwards, once we have been wounded, or that we have wounded another person, that will reinforce those wounds or find a way to be healed and be free from those burdens and take a lesson from our shadow side. So without further ado, welcome to tonight's show. It's entitled Living Beyond the Shadow, Peter's Teacher. Well, how many of you out there grew up watching Disney's Peter Pan? Or maybe you were fortunate to read the book by J.M. Barrie, Peter Pan, The Boy Who Would Not Grow Up. And if you're lucky to get your hands on the first edition, that's 1911. It's probably worth some money, but it's been reprinted and so forth. But that's the original story. Peter Pan, The Boy Who Would Not Grow Up. And that's what the Disney movie was based on. Now, both versions tell the story of Peter Pan, this mischievous boy who could fly. And he has many adventures on the island of Neverland, which is inhabited by mermaids and fairies and Indians and pirates. Okay, what a fantasy, you know, for kids. And Peter Pan story involves the characters of Wendy Darling and her two brothers, John and Michael, and Peter's fairy, Tinkerbell, the Lost Boys, and of course, good old Captain Hook. Now, Peter Pan is definitely one of those stories which can spark your imagination. In fact, there have been many adaptations of the original work, but you know, one of my personal favorites, the personal movie version that I love, is just simply entitled Hook. You know, the one that stars Robin Williams as Peter and Dustin Hoffman as Captain Hook. Well, one of my favorite scenes in Disney's Peter Pan is when Peter first meets Wendy. I mean, you remember the scene. It's early on in the movie, and Peter and Tinkerbell are, you know, are running around making a bunch of noise in the middle of the night, and Peter is just simply trying to catch his shadow. Now, to her surprise, you know, Wendy was awakened by all this noise and everything, and like, what's all this? What's going on here? But Wendy was simply amazed that Peter lost his shadow. And once he got it, she agreed to sew it back on for him. I mean, right there, the audience is just captured. You know, just who loses a shadow? You know, it's simply impossible. Because as kids, I'm sure we were all amused that Peter lost his shadow. You know, but there's certainly more to the story than a boy who refused to grow up. So let's take a closer look at this shadow as a companion who teaches us valuable lessons about who we ultimately are. So first of all, you know, we have all kinds of references for shadows out there in our world. You know, as kids, I'm sure we found it fascinating how our shadows mimic our hands and leg gestures. And we may even think that if we're fast enough, we could outrun our shadow. But our shadow is always with us. And, you know, okay, come on, people, even though you're adults, whenever there's a light or something and it casts a shadow on your hands, I know you're making finger puppets, okay? You know, that's just one of the things that we can do. We're just fascinated by a shadow, okay? And, you know, maybe you've read this in school or not, but if you remember Plato's Allegory of the Cave, this is where Plato describes people who have spent their entire lives chained by their necks and ankles in front of an inner wall with a view of an empty outer wall of a cave. And all they can do day after day after day is watch the shadows projected onto the outer wall by objects carried by others who are invisible, let's say, to the chained prisoners. Now, the shadows were created by the light from the fire, you know, that produces the shadow on the inner wall in front of the prisoners. And interestingly, you know, the point is made, and this is, you know, Plato's desire here, you know, he wanted to point out that only the shadows and sounds are the prisoner's one and only reality, which is certainly not an accurate representation of the real world. Because you see, in Plato's mind, the shadows only represented distorted or blurred copies of this reality. You know, the goal then was to, for us to understand that there are true forms of objects that people can only perceive through reason. In other words, Plato is saying, like, you see something, you see a shadow, it's not the real thing. Focus on the object and the light that's causing the shadow, but you have to perceive this through reason. And of course, he was a philosopher, and that's what led him down that road. Well, in other areas, especially in the field of psychology, you know, the Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung believed that the shadow was something that personified everything that people refused to acknowledge about themselves. You know, it was just looked at in very negative terms. So, in other words, Jung believed that the shadow is the part of our personality that we may have suppressed, often because it's too painful to look at. You know, it's like, I don't want to be reminded that I'm capable of committing all this evil, so I'm going to suppress that, you know, or other things about our personality that we just cannot tolerate. You know, it's just, we don't want to look at that, you know, so that becomes our shadow side. And secondly, he says the shadow is a hidden part of our personality that then becomes our unconsciousness. But the shadow is also associated with the qualities we have in which we worry are less appealing to others. Hence, that's another reason why we want to, you know, hide those things, you know, from others, because, well, it doesn't put us in a good light, so to speak. So for many people, let's just say, for example, the shadow represents things like sadness or rage or laziness or even cruelty. You know, things that we don't really want to show others, things that we don't really want to admit that we have those things in and of ourselves. But also, people might also include the so-called uncivilized and unacceptable things, like, let's say, your personal power, or your independence, or your emotional sensitivity. And as a result, we just might feel ashamed, and we lack self-awareness. You know, How, you know, can I ask for my personal power? How can I claim my independence? How can I show my emotional sensitivity without being ridiculed? So other examples could be that a person might believe that it's just, you know, it's just too assertive, you know, and to be assertive is maybe looked at as being selfish. So this person might go around through life, you know, being pushed around by others and really not standing up for themselves. You know, and they have this deep down resentment of why they're being pushed around and bullied by others because, well, to be assertive is to be selfish, which in then turn makes them feel guilty. And then you got this vicious cycle over and over again. But in this case, you know, a person's potential for assertiveness and his resentment both form part of his shadow. The goal then is for a person to be assertive. You know, in other words, to name their wants, to name their needs, to stand up for themselves without feeling guilty or shameful or resentful. So in that way, the shadow really shows where this person needs to heal. They need to heal from their guilt or their shame or their resentment. And it's okay to stand up for yourself. It's okay to make your needs known and so forth. So different understandings of the shadow in our lives indeed, you know. However, despite the different explanations, I think everybody can agree that our shadow is something we have to contend with throughout our lives. You know, like, how are we going to lose a shadow? You know, we're Peter Pan all over again. Okay, not that we have to sew it back on because it ain't going anywhere. Okay. So it is something that we have to contend with throughout our lives. And if we really pay attention, the shadow has much to teach us regarding what is limited through the senses and pointing to the underlying truth that we are souls. Well, if you joined me a couple of weeks ago, I talked about looking into the teacup and understanding that just as a cup can hold hot and cold liquids, so too can we hold what we perceive as opposing emotions or feelings within us. We can certainly hold love. We can also hold hate. We can hold joy. We can also hold sadness or disappointments or triumph or whatever it might be. We have that ability and that understanding of looking into the teacup and as it holds, to what we would perceive as just opposite liquids, so too can we hold, diametrically opposed emotions or feelings. And although the popular belief of many people out there is still that metaphorically and metaphysically speaking, that the shadow represents just the negativity of the true self. Yet, what if we were to understand that the authentic self, that is our soul, actually shadows the mind? Okay. What if we were to understand that the authentic self that I've been talking about for years, that the soul actually shadows the mind? Okay, and this is what I mean by this. I was recently reminded of a story. It's called The Two Birds on a Branch, and it's found in the Mandaka Upanishads. And the Upanishads happen to be like the classic literature in just Hindu understanding and just how one lives their lives. And this story illustrates the ongoing relationship we have between our individual self and our higher self, or the soul. And in the story of the two birds on the branch, as the story goes, a man was walking along a road and decided to sit down under a banyan tree. And after a while, he noticed two identical birds on one of the branches. The first bird was flying around, jumping around, going from one piece of fruit to another. That bird never rested, never sat still for one moment. Now, the other bird was calmly sitting on the branch, watching every move the first bird was making. The watchful one bird wasn't intimidated by the other bird, nor did he allow the restless bird to disturb him. He simply watched. And the more the man looked at these two birds, the more he started to realize that these birds represented an interplay between what was going on inside of himself. The restless bird represented his mind, always searching, always restless, never content, chasing one thing after another. The still bird represented his higher self or his soul, whose role is simply to be the witness of the mind. You see, the higher self or the soul can have awareness of what's going on without any reaction, because it knows who it is. It knows the futility of the mind's limited ability to remove the illusions that keep it racing about. So admit it, how many times do we struggle to just simply quiet our minds when all the time our minds are jumping around, flying from one thing to the next, something we call the monkey mind, and you try to catch monkeys, okay, you get the idea, but our minds are just like that. Our minds ruminate on shame and guilt and disappointments and the ever popular thoughts of, well, I should have, I could have, and I would have. Tell me these thoughts from the shadow don't keep us up night after night. They certainly do, because the monkey mind never sleeps. So, why is it important to have this awareness without reaction in order to be the witness of the soul? I mean, why is it essential to witness what the mind is doing as higher selves or that soul? Well, as my India friends explained it to me, they say, you know, people are already in a relationship with God, and they already have a relationship with all things and all people. They just don't know it yet, because people walk in ignorance of who they truly are. Yeah, you know, it's like that old hot dog vendor joke, you know, make me one with everything. Well, sir, I can't. You are already one with everything. You just don't realize that truth yet. See, ultimately, we are souls, souls that are vast and formless. And it's only, you know, the physical body that gives our soul its form. But how many of us only want to focus on the form and therefore follow only what the senses take in and our minds interpret as the end-all, be-all truth of who we think we are? Now, this doesn't mean that we just let the mind run wild and be out of control. No, no, it's not that. Instead, the higher self or the soul reins in the monkey mind through its witness and follows the soul's truth as the ultimate reality. In fact, it goes right along with many conversations I have with my friends in India, especially when we get on the subject of sin and ignorance. And whereas other people see sin as people are being bad or evil, they believe that people act out of their ignorance of who they are. And therefore, they will commit evil acts because they haven't realized themselves and others as souls. But once they have fully grasped this and are transformed by it, they clearly see this dynamic between wounding and healing. Every thought, every word, every action has the potential to heal or hurt, to nurture or to wound. Just as I explain this to kids, you know, we live in an echo that whatever we send out is going to come back to us in one form or another. Well, time for a break. So in the second half of the show tonight, let's talk about why we so easily give in to the perceptions of the shadow mind, as well as exactly what the shadow teaches us about becoming more aware of who we ultimately are. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Haupt. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. In the first half of the show tonight, I was talking about how the shadow is understood as the part of our personality that we have suppressed, often because it's too painful to look at. We're embarrassed by those things, or we want to save face, you know, and, you know, just something that society would be like, oh, no, 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 it doesn't fit in here. That doesn't fit with us. But so, in other words, it's the hidden part of our personality that's also part of our unconscious. And it is associated with certain qualities in which we worry are less appealing to allow somebody to see or to hear and so forth. So, as a result, and out of fear, we try to suppress the shadow self even further, when in reality, isn't it much healthier to become aware of our shadow as reminding us to integrate those aspects of ourselves that also have the potential to awaken our understanding of who we are as souls and enable us to live as souls on this earth. Now, it's true that our shadow can play tricks on us, okay? You know, as we struggle to try to quiet the mind, especially when it's jumping around and flying around from one thing to the next. Or when we contend with racing thoughts as we're all trying to fall asleep. I mean, granted, we have all been there, okay? And the more we say, okay, stop thinking about it, stop thinking about it, stop thinking about it, forget that. That's not going to work. We're gonna be awake a few more hours. So again, you know, why is this all important? Why is it essential to, you know, have the soul witness what the mind is doing as our higher selves, you know, as that soul? Well, as I shared right before the break, my India friends will always say that people are already in a relationship with God, and they're already in a relationship with all things, and they're already in a relationship with everybody. They just don't know it yet. You know, we live our lives in ignorance of who we truly are. And, you know, the shadow has a way, if we're paying attention to it, to direct us to walk in a deeper level of gratitude. Now, what if we begin to integrate this sense of gratitude every day? So reflect on this perspective, you know, this prayer of gratitude that I mentioned twice, you know, before the break. I want to thank everyone. I want to thank everything who has triggered me in one way, shape, or form so I can further heal my shadow self. So I want to thank everybody who has triggered me so I can further heal my shadow self. I mean, just imagine, okay? Just imagine if we're able to do this every day, where would our guilt go? What would happen to our shame? What would happen to our bitterness and resentment? Where would all those things go? I imagine that they would cease to exist because maybe we've come to a place where everything and everyone is a lesson for us to embrace more of who we are as a soul. So I want to thank everyone. I want to thank everything who has triggered me so I can further heal my shadow. That's a powerful prayer of gratitude. I mean, imagine if we're able to fully understand our shadow side as something that reminds us that our actions are not about blaming another person for making us feel a certain way, but maybe our shadow side is actually holding a mirror up to us. So let's you know, remember this, okay? That another person's reaction to what we may or may not have done is their responsibility. Okay? This is another person's reaction to what we have said or what we have done and so forth. That's on them. That's their responsibility. What's being triggered in them? Now, our response, our reaction to how they react is our responsibility, and that comes from our shadow. Just like another person's reaction is their responsibility because it comes from their shadow. Ours is how we react to how they react. That's our shadow. Okay? But instead, you know, we like to project onto others so we don't have to take the blame and accept responsibility for our own actions, right? I mean, how many times have you said this or heard somebody else say, well, you know, it's not my fault that I do this or such, you know, or what you made me do. Or if you weren't the way you were, then I wouldn't be this way. Okay, that is all shadow stuff language. Okay, and that's somebody who just wants to keep pushing it down instead of accepting responsibility and find that healing. I mean, should I go on? Because we have hundreds of excuses why we allow the shadow and the monkey mind to govern our thoughts and behaviors. Yet, when all the while, if we would just allow ourselves to integrate the shadow as a wise teacher who simply wants us to realize and fully embrace ourselves as the ultimate truth, as souls. Because when you get right down to it, the soul does not wrestle with shame. The soul does not beat itself up with guilt. The soul doesn't take delight in any of those things. The shadow does all of those things because it wants us to remember what else needs to be healed in our lives, while at the same time, say it with me, helping us remember who we truly are and gain higher and higher insights into our true self, that is, the soul. Now, here's the deeper lesson in all of this, if this isn't already deep enough, that when we're able to truly see ourselves as souls, and ultimately, when we are able to realize ourselves as souls, we're going to begin to see others as souls. And we are no longer willing to accept relating to people as anything less, as them also being souls. It is inevitable. What we see in ourselves, and we have that realization that we are a soul, we're going to begin to see others differently. We're going to begin to see them as souls, even if they don't recognize it in themselves. Well, there's also another story, perhaps one of my favorite stories, that helps explain this false notion that we are limited. And it is a false notion. And this comes from the Indian tale of the washerman and the donkey. You've heard me say this on many times. Like I said, it's a favorite story of mine, but it has so many applications in our lives. And the story goes like this. Once upon a time, there was a man who lived 100 years ago. And being a simple man, his occupation was that of a washerman. You know, one who goes around and collects people's dirty laundries and just loads them on, you know, his donkey and just takes them down to the river and washes the laundry and lays them out on rocks to dry. And then once they are dry, he folds the laundry and he returns the laundry to his customers. And that's how he gets paid. Okay. Well, one day he was collecting the laundry, as he always does, and taking it down to the river to wash them. He realized that he had forgotten the rope to which he would tie his donkey to a tree, so that it wouldn't run off while he was washing the laundry. And once he realized this, he was so beside himself because, yeah, granted, he would lose a whole day's wage if he had to go back home and get his rope. So he stood there just not knowing what to do. And as he was standing there just not knowing what to do, a man walked by and asked, "Sir, are you all right?" The washerman explained the situation to this man about forgetting his rope so he couldn't tie his donkey and went on about other things. And this other man just simply smiled and put his hand up and said, "Ah, sir, don't worry. I have an idea. Just pretend to tie the donkey to the tree." "Okay, what do you mean, just pretend?" "Yes, just pretend to go through the motions of tying your donkey to the tree, only make sure he sees you do this." Well, as ridiculous as it sounded, the washerman did just that. He pretended to tie his donkey to the tree, making sure the donkey was watching him. And then he took his laundry down to the river and he began to wash it. And every now and then, the washerman would look back at the tree just to see what the donkey was doing. The donkey was still there, eating grass and acting as if it had been tied to the tree all along, perfectly content. And when the washerman finished with his laundry for the day, as he did every day, he loaded up his donkey and he commanded the donkey to move. "Let's go." But the donkey didn't move. In fact, it acted as if it had been tied to the tree all day long. Now, the washerman thought he was really in a bind now because he couldn't get his donkey to move. So he leaves everything and he runs and he finds the man in another village who told him to pretend tying his donkey to the tree in the first place. And he found the man and he explained the situation that now the donkey refused to move because it thinks it is still tied to the tree. And the man replied to the washerman that, "Oh, sir, this is an easy solution. Just as you pretended to tie the donkey to the tree, now I want you to pretend to untie your donkey from the tree. Only make sure the donkey watches you do this." Well, the washerman like shook his head in disbelief, but he goes back to the donkey and he gets the donkey's attention and he starts to pretend that he is untying the donkey. And he made sure the donkey was watching him all this time. Then, with a stern voice, he commanded the donkey to move, and he and the donkey started to walk back home. Now, on the surface, we just might think to ourselves that the donkey in the story was just plain stupid, okay, being tricked into thinking that it was tied, when actually, it was not. But let's think this through. Because, you know, after all the washerman did was simply go through the motions of tying and untying his donkey, which actually worked. And my friends in India have often used this story to demonstrate how their scriptures say that this exemplifies classic human behavior. They say, we think we're the body, we think we're the mind and the intellect. And all these things need to be nurtured. And, you know, they said, on the other hand, maybe it's our duty to provide, you know, the desire and the pampering of these things. And, you know, a man is working day and night to meet these needs and running around after various temptations. There goes the monkey mind again, because he thinks that if he doesn't nurture his body, if he doesn't nurture his mind, doesn't nurture his intellect, he's going to die. And as a result, he's put restrictions all around himself. So like the donkey, humanity thinks it's in this servitude or bondage or being tied to a tree, metaphorically speaking. In other words, humanity doesn't really know that we're, you know, not the body, we're not the mind, we're not the intellect, we're independent. We have these things, yes, we are independent. Because when we realize that we are a soul that's vast and eternal, there are no restrictions on you. No bondages and no ropes or any of that stuff. And so even if this body dies, the soul will not. And, you know, their scriptures say that humanity, the body and the soul are not one. They're different. But we are so limited in our understanding that we are bound by what we see and feel and hear and taste and touch that we think, well, that's all there is. So as a result, we, like the donkey, end up believing this illusion that we are limited or restricted simply because we were told by some other person that we are. And unfortunately, we take that illusion on as our identity. And we act accordingly, believing that this is good as it's going to get. And that's not true. There is way, way more to us than perhaps we don't even realize. And I see this quite a bit in counseling people who identify themselves with their problems or their illnesses. You know, they're not aware of being more than what they have become so far in life. So they often accept this distorted template that has been laid over top of their lives. And as a result, people tend to beat themselves up for making the same mistakes over and over again in the choices, the relationships, and life. Yet in the story, the donkey that is free all the time thinks that it's tied. So on a metaphysical level, you know, we who are souls believe we're tied to the body, and therefore we simply cannot imagine living as a soul. So we believe that we have to find this key to our prison, you know, that the key, so to speak, could be found in the form of money or freedom, passion or true love or any other kind of desire. But what if we're already free? What if there is no rope? What if there is no tree? What if the illusion of being in prison is nothing more than an illusion? Now, I don't want to come across as one who minimizes another person's pain or problems or struggles. But again, think about it. Just how might we be empowered if we saw ourselves and we see ourselves as solutions to our problems by removing the layers of conditioning or the imaginary ropes that keep us tied to our problems? There's the shadow side. So what keeps us bound to toxic relationships? What keeps us thinking that there's nothing more to us because we have been told this thing about ourselves all of our lives? So in other words, you know, if you think you are weak, you're going to become weak. If you think you're a victim, you're going to be a victim. And most people have accepted this inner weakness to the point where they've attached themselves to it. And they don't want to come out of their self-created illusions. But you know, maybe by looking at ourselves more closely, by examining our motives, examining our assumptions, and our limited perspectives, and paying attention to our shadow, we just might realize the first step towards lasting transformation is to acknowledge the illusion of oppression. It's all in our minds. Sit with that one for a while. Because after all, we might even be in a physical prison. But if we found our true nature as a soul, then no amount of earthly limitation can convince us that we are limited, inadequate, or restricted. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. So good to have you here this evening with me. And I invite you to tune in again in 2 weeks on, that would be Wednesday, April 23rd, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on bbsradio.com, Station 1. So in the meantime, everybody behave yourselves out there. Everybody be safe. Everybody have, for those who are celebrating Passover, have a great Passover. For those who are celebrating Easter, have a great Easter. And we will talk once again in 2 weeks. Take care. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific Time on PBS Radio TV.